Hey folks, we have a real quick announcement before we get into this week's episode. We are proud to have joined the Tape Deck Media Podcast Network. Tape Deck is an indie comedy network where you will find a whole lineup of great comedy podcasts. As part of the transition to being on the network, we are going to be making some pretty minor tweaks to the format of the show that we just kind of wanted to let you guys know about. The first thing you are likely to notice is that our release schedule is going to get a whole lot more consistent.
Yeah.
We will now be releasing new episodes every other week. During the release week, we will be publishing an episode on Monday and then again on Friday.
Should change it to, we will now be releasing episodes.
Yes, exactly.
Period. Because, yeah. Like, what, more than twice a year?
Yeah.
You'll get them?
At best, yes.
Anyway.
Might choose to drop some, like, surprise bonus episodes every once in a while from time to time, but the main episodes will be on this new bi-weekly schedule going forward.
Yeah.
The second change that we're going to make to the format of the show is just, like, a slight trimming of the movie summaries to make room for a bit more time spent on the, like, the behind-the-scenes or production info.
Yeah, because those summaries are way too damn long.
Yeah, that's true. I don't like talking.
I mean, I like talking. I love it. But when I'm listening to it while I'm editing it, I find the production info, like the behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot more interesting to even edit. So I'm assuming to listen than the summary. And
yeah.
I mean, we'll still get all the jokes. And like, if we have a good joke, we're not going to leave it out of the summary. Go in, get that joke in, just not so detailed. And there's always some drama or something I can usually find. But yeah, anyway. Oh, and we're actually a couple movies ahead as far as recording. So the summary and production episode changes won't go into effect until February, I believe. But so far, I'm finding some good stuff for our next movie, so you can look forward to that.
Cool. All right. Aside from that stuff, I think you will find us to be the same lovable and hilarious show that you always have.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're one of our many, many hate listeners, we will continue to be the boring morons that keep your spiteful heart pumping. Either way, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
See you at the party, Richter!
Welcome to See You at the Party, Richter. My name is Aaron Freskis, and with me as always are my beautiful co-host, Joseph Beck-Castro.
Hello, cutie pies.
And then we have also Chris Chapman.
Oh, hello.
And this episode, this movie, this time we're going to be watching Arnold's 1982, I'm assuming, action-adventure movie. I've barely seen it. But
fantasy epic?
There you go. That's a
vehicle?
Good one. Conan the Barbarian, which I had to make sure I said it right.
Do you usually say Conan O'Barbarian?
No, I usually say Conan, like O'Brien, you know?
Yes.
Conan O'Barbarian. That's a good one.
But that's not how it's pronounced, correct? It's Conan?
Yeah, pretty sure it's Conan.
Okay, that's what I thought. And as always, before we watch the movie or do any sort of research, we'd like to start things off by taking a quick second to share any experiences or memories or just random thoughts we may have going into the film. But yeah, I have never really, I've seen bits and pieces of this movie and it's never on anything anymore. So
yeah,
like it's never going to happen. Like it probably wouldn't have happened me watching it if we weren't doing this podcast. But how about you guys? Have you guys seen this before? Joe?
I saw this once a very long time ago and I remember almost nothing about it except for he says, it's like two snakes and they come together.
He does the motion with his hands, doesn't he?
Yes. Which they actually make a Haribo Twin Steaks gummies, which are the best ones. Mm. So every time I eat those, I think of that. But that's about really all I have for this.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, have you seen it at all?
Same as you. I think I've seen like small bits and pieces on TV, but never the whole thing. And like you said, they don't play it on anything anymore. Like it used to be on the weird cable channels because there's so much like violence and sex and shit in it, I think. Or like
Cinemax. Yeah.
Maybe it was on like Cinemax or something like that. Like I remember it being on something because I remember my dad watching it when I was little. But this was when I was like 5 or 6. So probably after when it was probably on cable all the time or something.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's lots of like famous moments and stuff from this movie, but I've never really watched.
Are there?
So, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. There's like all the James Earl Jones stuff where he's talking about.
He has like the Ann Perkins haircut in it.
Who?
Ann Perkins from Parks and Rec.
I've never seen Parks and Rec either. Gotcha.
What's her? Rashida Jones.
Yeah.
Where it's just like long on the sides and like straight across bangs.
Interesting. This was used to be a comic book, did it not? Or is
it? I think it still is. Yeah, like I think there's a news story came out recently. I think Marvel just either sold or lost the rights to the character, to Conan.
Okay.
So I think it started out as a fantasy book series, and then in the 70s, they Marvel started making comics.
All right, I'm ready for Arnold and the MCU. Let's do it.
Damn right.
Did either of you watch the remake? Wasn't that Jason Momoa? Yeah,
Jason Momoa. I did not.
I didn't even know that existed. So
yeah. I have it on our, what's it called, list.
The bonus episode list.
Which we'll end up doing eventually, but which is supposed to be really, really bad. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's whatever.
I'm assuming there's no camp to it. It's just all like the way they did Total Recall or RoboCop.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's just like, it just seemed like a very generic action movie at the time when it came out.
Yeah. And he was supposed to come out with, I swear it was on like his IMDb, it's a Conan the Conqueror.
Mm. Yeah, I heard that's in pre-production.
Oh, really?
For like ever.
I remember we talked about that in some other episode, like he was going to do that in the late 90s.
Yeah, that was it was The Legend of Conan, sorry.
Yeah.
And it is in development, it says. That was the one where he's talking to Howard Stern, and that was one of the things, I think.
Right.
That when it was True Lies 2, that, and then something, he said something else too, but yeah.
I think he was talking about triplets, right?
Yeah. Did that. That's what it was. It
True
was
Lies triplets. 2, triplets, and the third Conan movie.
Yeah.
Second grader cop.
Just skip first grade.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while, right?
Oh, okay. So this was also directed by John Milius. This is also directed by him.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So any other thoughts about this? I got nothing because I really haven't seen this at all.
No, I'm just excited I'm excited to watch this one because it's kind of, I guess, a blind spot. It's one of those movies that's like apparently a good Arnold movie that I just haven't seen for some reason. So I think we might have discussed this at some point in the very early days of this podcast, that this was probably the one I was most excited to watch because of that. So
yeah. Same as Joe. I'm kind of excited because it's like a lot of people talk about this one like it's a classic, and I've never really watched it, like never really sat down.
Really? They talk about it like it's a classic?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching it, I guess. I'm pretty sure this is the first big one.
Yes. Because this predates Terminator.
Yeah, by a couple years.
Yeah. And it's after Hercules in New York, which I'm surprised they gave another chance. But after watching him in Streets of San Francisco, I can see it.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
Why are you laughing?
I was just laughing before what Joe said because I was thinking somebody saw him in Streets of San Francisco and was like, that guy, we need that guy. Except maybe give him less lines. Like maybe the character's quieter than that. I don't know. Because I don't think he talks very much in this movie.
Anything else at all?
That's pretty much it. So, yeah. We'll be right back.
Yeah, let's get into production stuff in a second.
Yeah.
Yes. I will see you in like 6 seconds.
Yeah, right now.
Okay. Bye.
What is it you seek?
A standard. A symbol. Perhaps on a shield. Two snakes coming together. Facing each other. But they're one.
And we're back. I think now it's time to get into some pre-production stuff, promotional videos, that kind of thing. So I'm going to throw it over to Aaron. Aaron, why don't you tell us stuff?
Okay. All right. So the film we are going to watch was directed and co-written by John Milius, who also directed Red Dawn and Flight of the Intruder, which I've seen part of Red Dawn and none of Flight of the Intruder. Willem Dafoe's in it.
I don't even know what that is. What?
I think it was Willem Dafoe.
What is that?
It's a war movie. Like, it's about flights that are intruded upon, I think. That's all. I looked it up, and then I completely forgot.
Wouldn't the intruder be flying?
Yeah, exactly. It would be about intruders whom are flying.
What did I say?
Flights that get intruded on, which doesn't make any sense.
Flight of the intruder. Oh, okay, so the intruder is the one that's flying.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Or it's the name of the plane.
You're talking about somebody breaking into a plane mid-flight.
Yeah. Like the intruder's on a flight, and it's... Okay, that still, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, Danny Glover's in it, too.
Oh, okay.
And cool. Roseanne Arquette.
I thought you were just going to say Roseanne. I was like, man, that's a cast.
Oh, and Tom Sizemore. But so, yeah, in addition to co-writing Conan, I keep saying it wrong, by the way, but Milius also co-wrote Apocalypse Now with Francis Ford Coppola. And then he also wrote Dirty Harry and its sequel, Magnum Force, and then Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford, as well as co-creating the HBO show Rome. And with the exception of Rome, he's basically written a lot of movies I've never seen but heard were all right. You know, like guy movies, like fucking man movie. Like Clear and Present Danger, I heard was good, but I've never seen it.
I think I've seen parts of that movie. But
that goes with most Tom Clancy movies.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen one of Harrison Ford's Tom Clancy, which I think it's Clear and Present Danger and Present Danger that's not still a little more clear. I can't remember. Patriot Games. Yeah, that's what it is. But anyway, quick questions. First of all, I think I asked you this already, but are you guys Apocalypse Now seen? Yes, seen? No?
No.
No, neither? No. And okay.
I've seen like a small part of it. I think we watched that in like a high school film class.
Really?
Which was really fucked up because they started it from the beginning and it's the part where he's doing naked karate in his room and cuts his hand on glass.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
Martin Sheen.
It's actually real too, where he's just getting hammered and they're filming it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I haven't really seen it. If I have, I definitely don't remember it. Also, have you guys seen Rome? Because that one's pretty good. The show on HBO?
Never seen it.
No.
No?
Nope.
It's good and it actually makes sense that it was made by Milius after reading about Conan and how much like Carey put into the sets and all that for Conan because they took so much care to like make stuff in the show accurate and I guess actually built a lot of the sets, which was like was 5 acres of period accurate sets. That were the largest sets built at the time and actually ended up getting the show canceled because the production costs were so high. So the show was good. It just got canceled.
See, the problem with Gladiator shows is every time I think about watching one, I'm like, yeah, I've seen Gladiator. I don't know why I need to watch this too.
Gladiator is probably the best sum up of, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so Conan also had a few other writers credited. First off, with a created by credit is Robert E. Howard, who wrote a majority of the Conan comics that the movie's based on. Either of you guys read those?
No. I mean, like, I'm aware of him as a comic book character. Were there books, too? Or was he just, like, mainly a comic?
Yeah, sorry, I said that wrong.
I thought there were books.
He was the author of the actual original books.
Yeah.
Yes. And then Marvel ended up
picking up the... Yeah, Marvel got the rights and started
writing. They just, it's also fantasy, so eh. And didn't it either get canceled recently or picked up or something like that recently? I can't remember.
I'm sure it's been canceled and then restarted like 100 times since they bought the property.
Yeah. So second up with an uncredited story credit, yeah, whatever, is Edward Summer, who also was a producer on the movie. And I guess he wrote the script with the help of a comic book writer named Roy Thomas. But that was discarded pretty soon after because Oliver Stone agreed to take a stab at it, who only joined the project because the studio, Paramount Studios, agreed to fund the initial $2.5 million budget if they got, quote, a name screenwriter, which at this point, he'd written the screenplay for Midnight Express, the 1978 movie I'd never heard of. I mean, I've heard of but never seen.
Midnight Express.
No, I've seen it.
But he actually won an Oscar for it, too. Oh. So it was about American college. Wait, has somebody seen it? No?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Is it good?
Yeah. I mean, it's about the... Yeah, I think you're saying the American college student who goes to some fucking country.
Turkey,
and smuggling drugs and gets arrested and goes to prison. And everybody remembers the scene of Cable Guy like, oh, Billy.
Yes.
That's from that movie where she puts her boob against the glass and he's like, oh, which is probably what I would do, even like right now. And I haven't been in a Turkish prison forever. But
Wait, was it supposed to, is it based on a true story?
I don't know. It's been like 20 years since I've seen it.
Was he actually smuggling or was it an accident? Do you remember that?
I think he was smuggling because I think he had it taped to him. But like I said, it's been like 20 years.
Okay. And I was so I was looking through his IMDb, Oliver Stone, and I don't think I've really seen many of his movies either. I think there was like two out of a long list of his more known movies, which I'm going to list real quick. Platoon, which I saw, but I don't remember.
Never seen.
Wall Street, never saw it.
Never seen it.
when either of you have seen one, just let me know. Born on the 4th of July, Tom Cruise, never seen it.
I mean, I've seen Platoon, but...
Do you remember it?
I mean, kind
of. Sort of, yeah. I remember Willem Dafoe falling down. as he's getting shot or something like that.
Tom Sizemore's in it.
His? Okay.
Maybe it's Tom Berenger.
The Doors, never seen it.
I saw that.
Good?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. I heard, what's his name? Val Kilmer does pretty good at...
yeah, he does a good Jim Morrison.
JFK, didn't watch that either. Natural Born Killers, which I remember a lot of hullabaloo about when it came out, but I think it was because it was super violent. Nixon, haven't seen that with Anthony Hopkins. Any Given Sunday, which I actually watched recently.
It's so weird for you to be... You say Anthony Hopkins like you're going to do an Anthony Hopkins impression, but instead you're trying to do a Nixon impression, and neither one is good.
You do what you can. Anyway, Any Given Sunday, which I actually watched somewhat recently, it's fine. Joe, have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a little over the top, but...
Yeah, exactly, which I think most of his movies might be. World Trade Center with Nicolas Cage, which I have seen, but I can't remember.
Nope. I'm pretty sure I know what happens.
I thought you were never supposed to forget.
Both bad jokes. W, the George W. Bush movie, didn't watch that either. I think that was Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
And then the Wall Street sequel with Shia LaBeouf.
Did he actually make that?
Yeah, he made. Do you not remember that?
No, I remember the movie. I'm just surprised that Oliver Stone actually.
Oh yeah, he was the director of that. And then Snowden with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which two or three. But anyway, I was just curious how many of those you guys knew or watched.
I mean, I knew about most of them, but I haven't seen most of them. But yeah, the Conan thing, it's like way out of his wheelhouse because all of his stuff has been like, I guess if you want to call it historical dramas or political whatever, you know? And then he's just like, oh, let me do like a high fantasy with a buff guy and a sword, you know?
There was some that I left out of there that he has more that he's, but there were like ones that I've either heard of or never heard of, and I was like, anyway, but so back to Conan. So eventually John Milius agreed to direct the movie if he could make changes to the script, which ended up being a good thing because the estimated budget for Oliver Stone's script was $40 million, which was like all the money that existed in 1979. By the way, if you're wondering why the budget was so high, it's because Oliver Stone proposed a story that would have been 4 hours long, and instead of taking place in the days of yore, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it was set in a post-apocalyptic future with Conan leading an army in a battle against a horde of 10,000 mutants. And I'm sure both of you would be super surprised to learn that Oliver Stone was actually addicted to both cocaine and depressants when he wrote up this draft.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, that is real. It's from a 1995 Oliver Stone biography written by James Riordan. And it's called Stone, The Controversies, Excesses, and Exploits of a Radical Filmmaker. So yeah, it's from that.
Oh, okay.
But, So John Milius actually called Stone's draft, quote, a total drug fever dream, albeit an inspired one. But yeah, Milius cut a bunch of stuff out of his Oliver Stone script and was able to cut the budget down to a bit more manageable number of $20 million. So what was that, half?
Yeah.
Which... I have something from Arnold Schwarzenegger later, which said it was actually at $70 million. So, who knows? Anyway, they also got Dino De Laurentiis to co-produce the movie. The guy who Arnold did an amazing impression of in his book. De Laurentiis assigned the movie to his daughter Rafaela, and also got Universal to agree to distribute the movie in the U.S. By the way, this is an obvious, like stupidly obvious question, but did you guys know that Dino De Laurentiis is the like his granddaughter is Giada De Laurentiis, like the hot Food Network chef, which I don't know why that never clicked.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, that's his granddaughter.
That makes sense.
Yeah. She's hot.
Huh. And it still blew my mind, even though it's super obvious. Like, if you think about it for like a second, because it's the same name. But anyway.
I thought you were going to tell me that Dino was just Italian for dinosaur.
That's usually not a move people make. Well, I mean, sometimes. I've known a lot of people with money who go to like culinary school and become chefs and everything. But yeah, for the most part, the people aren't. But there's some people who, you know, want to achieve shit or whatever. Usually it's like, oh, yeah, she's a famous actress because, you know, her uncle was a producer or whatever. Like if you go on like Wikipedia and look at like all these actors, like, they don't have to be famous. I think I was looking at Haley Steinfeld, whatever the fuck her name is.
Yeah.
From, not Hawkeye.
From, yeah.
Yeah, her, like, you know, like our uncle or dad or parents or some shit are all in the industry, and it's just like big nepotism.
Yo, that's what I thought you were going to start with was nepotism with Hollywood. I thought you were making a joke at first.
No, what I'm really saying is, Mom, Dad, if you're listening, fuck you. Why weren't you a famous actors or producers? I'm fucking sitting here doing a stupid podcast.
You should be doing this podcast with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
Yeah, but your kids are going to be monsters in the podcast.
Well, they'll definitely be monsters.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I wanted to read a few passages from Arnold's book about getting the role after already knowing that he'd previously fucked up the first meeting with De Laurentiis by making fun of his height and his strong Italian accent.
This is after the first meeting?
Yeah, so this is after the first meeting. And like I mentioned before, this is coming from his 2012 autobiography titled Total Recall. So he begins by talking about meeting Oliver Stone, who producer Ed Pressman brought on due to Paramount wanting a named screenwriter attached to the project. So Arnold says, quote, "This was how I met Oliver Stone. He was known at that point as a rising star and had finished the screenplay for Midnight Express based on a true story. That script would win Oliver his first Oscar. Conan attracted him because it was epic and mythical and had a franchise potential, and because Paramount was willing to pay." So I'm assuming it was mostly the pay part.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, nothing else he does has like franchise potential or whatever. It's like, that doesn't seem like his wheelhouse.
You never seen JFK 2? I guess that would work out with JFK Jr. Shit, so.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I was thinking it would just be RFK.
Either way, someone's dying. So anyway, he says of Oliver Stone, quote, "He was a crazy guy, very smart and very entertaining. He thought of himself as a great writer, and I got a kick out of the fact that he was so confident like me. Curious if there was a reason for that confidence, but anyway, he also mentions that while hanging out, Oliver Stone would have Arnold read the books and comics out loud in order to get a sense of how to best write for him. And as I mentioned earlier, Oliver Stone's original draft was pretty insane, which actually Arnold gives a little more in-depth description of, saying, quote, "He changed the setting from the remote past to the future after the downfall of civilization. He imagined a 4-hour-long saga in which the forces of darkness are threatening the Earth, and Conan must raise an army to restore the kingdom of a princess in an epic battle against 10,000 mutants. So yeah, he then talks about John Milius re-entering the picture and basically saving the day. Milius was originally interested in doing the movie, but he had problems with the producer, and so he dropped out, and then he came back after he saw some set designs by the same guy that did Alien. But yeah, besides trimming down the length of Oliver Stone's script, Milius also happened to be under contract to do his next movie with Dino De Laurentiis. So this leads to producer Ed Pressman spending a year in negotiations with De Laurentiis. They eventually make a deal to co-produce the movie, which definitely ends up paying off after Papa Dino works his magic to get Universal Pictures on board as the film's U.S. distributor. The only problem is that obviously Dino coming on as producer isn't exactly ideal for Arnold, which sucks because he knew that Conan could potentially be his like big break in Hollywood. Yeah. And I'm just going to quote Arnold from the book here because me summarizing it up, it's just not going to do it justice. So yeah, he says, quote, "De Laurentiis still despised me from our first encounter. Even though I was under contract, he wanted to get rid of me." I'm surprised he doesn't use the accent right here. Because
What was the first movie again? I can't remember what movie
Flash Gordon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. He was making all Flash right. Gordon. It goes on to say, in quotes, "I don't like Schwarzenegger," he told Milius. "He's a Nazi," which I'm surprised he didn't throw the "I don't like a Schwarzenegger" like he did before. Luckily, John had already decided that I was perfectly cast. "No, Dino," he said, "there is only one Nazi on this team, and that is me. I am the Nazi," which this is Milius talking.
What?
Milius wasn't a Nazi, of course. He just wanted to shock Dino, and he loved to say outrageous things. For the rest of production, he would go to odd antique stores and buy these little lead figurines of Mussolini and Hitler and Stalin and Francisco Franco and put them on Dino's desk, which...
What the fuck?
I don't know. The cocaine, I guess. So yeah, he then talks about how, I guess, in an effort to get Arnold to quit the film, De Laurentiis sends his lawyer to renegotiate, with the lawyer telling Arnold that Dino doesn't want to give him his contracted 5 points anymore. Did I say that already? When they signed him, he, whatever he agreed to as far as the money he was going to make, but then he also agreed to get 5 points off the gross.
The back end.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, when he signed his contract.
Yeah.
So Arnold says, quote, "Take the points. I'm in no position to negotiate." It's a standard him to hear me simply say that because he'd expected a fight. By the way, remember at this point, he's pretty good off of like, because at this point he was already doing investments in California and whatnot. So I think he'd already made or was close to making $1 million at this point.
Oh, really?
Just off of real estate.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So he says, quote, "All the points," I repeated, take it all. I was thinking you can take it and shove it because that's not what I'm doing the movie for. I understood the reality. The situation was lopsided. Dino had the money and I needed the career, so it made no sense to argue. Plus, I also thought the day will come when the tables have turned and Dino will have to pay. Okay, so, yeah.
That just sounds like a trailer for another movie.
Where he's just beating the shit out of Dino De Laurentiis? Some old guy?
Old Italian. A really tiny Italian
Please
guy.
Don't heat me. All right. Okay. Anyway. So yeah, filming began in October 1980, and we won't go too much into that, but I wanted to mention one more story from Arnold's book. So he talks about how John Milius had him learn different fighting like styles through different trainers. Mm-hmm. He did 3 months of weapons training and learned how to use the sword and then martial arts training, including kenjutsu, which is Brazilian fighting, I guess. And then horse riding training. Milius also had him slimmed down from 240 to 210. But anyway, wow. So Milius also hired a Conan expert, which Arnold talks about in his book, saying, quote, "By far the wildest trainer Milius found for me was a Conan fanatic who actually lived outdoors in the mountains. He was so into Conan stories that he wanted to experience the Conan life, and he'd become an expert at sleeping in the snow, climbing trees, and living off the land. He even called himself Conan. Dirt and freezing cold didn't seem to bother him. I went skiing with him in Aspen, Colorado, and he skied in shorts." He then goes on to talk about how fans of the Conan books and comics approved of his casting, which he said was a relief because the people most likely to go see the movie multiple times were guys like the crazy Conan fanboy.
Who live in the mountains and don't watch movies.
Seriously. Okay. So, So Arnold also discusses his feelings about the MPAA rating for Conan.
Because it was R, right?
Yes, it was
definitely
R. So, yeah, he mentions disapproving of the studio executives who were kowtowing to MPAA board members whose names are not released publicly, which definitely makes sense.
Yeah.
He then goes on to give his impression of the MPAA members, saying, quote, "Most were middle-aged people with grown kids, but they reacted to Conan like a bunch of old ladies. Oh, the blood. I've got to close my eyes."
Oh, I can imagine that in his voice so clearly.
I'm telling you, if he only reads like the first, I think, 100 pages of the book. If he would have read the whole thing on the audiobook, I definitely would have bought that. But so the MPAA ends up telling them that the film is too gory, which Arnold was definitely not happy about. Basically calling them girly men and being like, "Where did they get these squeamish idiots?" He also defends the movie's violence in a way that I'd say only an 80s action star probably could. Saying, quote, So what if the first thing you see is Thulsa Doom raiding Conan's boyhood village and then his mother's head goes flying through the air? You could say we needed that scene to make Thulsa Doom the ultimate villain so that when Conan hunts him down, it's justified. But you fall in love with your own work. But he does end up admitting that having to tone down the violence helped it reach a wider audience, which so the first test screening took place in February of 1982 and received an insanely high score of 93 out of 100.
Jeez.
So the studio set up a second screening and asked Arnold to come, and his description of the audience for the second screening is interesting, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, he says, quote, "Driving past the Cineplex the next afternoon, we could see this was no ordinary screening. A line stretched around the block, and besides comic book fans that Universal had expected, there were bodybuilders with tight shirts on and bulging muscles, gays, freaks with weird hair and glasses, people wearing Conan outfits."
I'm just really glad that gays and freaks with weird hair are two separate entries.
So I guess so many people showed up for the screening that they had to open up two additional theaters in order to accommodate them all. And I'm sure you guys are just as surprised as I was to find out that the audience consisted mostly of men, including a big old group of leather-clad bikers. Arnold actually credits the Knight's high test scores to the bodybuilding community, who he said made up a third of the Knight's audience. He then gives us yet another classic quote, saying,
"The studio was very excited and Dino De Laurentiis was flipping. He came over to me that night and said, 'I make you a star.' With his accent, I wasn't sure whether he meant that he intended to make me a star or that he already had. But this time I didn't tease him about it." All right.
It's not enough to just do the accent. He then has to see, it's funny because he doesn't know tenses.
Okay, and that was me doing the accent. But it says, well, I make you a star. Like, you can tell they didn't, I'm sure they didn't get it. I don't know.
Well, Austria and Italy border each other. I don't know if they like have beef or whatever.
Well, I'm sure just the fact that he was a dick to him to start, like Dino De Laurentiis was a dick to him to start. Both of them. It went both ways.
Well, I don't know if he's calling him a Nazi because he's like from Austria or his dad was a Nazi or whatever, or if it was just his personality.
I'm thinking it's just because he was German.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't recall like Italy being on the right side of that war either. So
yeah,
that's a good point. So the film premiered in Spain on March 16th, 1982, with the U.S. release date of May 14th, 1982. Opened number one at the box office with $9.6 million opening weekend, beating out the number two movie by over $6 million, which I think equals like, it's like $22 billion for 2023 dollars. But the movie it beat was Porky's, by the way. And I feel like there's a lot of overlap between the Porky's audience and the Conan audience, too.
Probably.
I don't know. Is the teen feeling like horny that night? Or are they feeling like they want to see some blood? Violent. Yeah. And real quick, I like giving the top 10 of the week it was released because there are a bunch of movies. And especially for this one, there's a bunch of movies I've never heard of. So it went, number one was Conan. Number two is Porky's. Three was The Sword and the Sorcerer, which is like some fantasy movie with a pretty badass poster and has a bunch of actors I've never heard of. But you guys should definitely check out the poster. I should have had it.
It sounds familiar.
I should have had it up. But yeah, you should look up the poster because it looks like a fantasy book cover. Like I was like, oh, that's a badass poster. But I saw the one on IMDb.
Oh, let's see.
But number four was some movie called Paradise, starring Phoebe Cates and Scott Baio's friend from Charles in Charge, Willie Ames, which was also a period movie. This one taking place during the Victorian period. So three out of the top four were period movies.
Yeah, that is a badass poster.
Yeah, I told you. Should have pulled it up. Like,
yeah, it's really fucking
good. Yeah, it looks good. It
looks like Darth Maul is about to eat He-Man.
Number five was Wrong is Right, which starred Sean Connery. Oh, check that one out. Check that poster out.
All right.
So it's called Wrong is Right, which has an insane plot description on IMDb. So it says, quote, a TV reporter finds himself in the middle of an Arab leader buying two portable nukes, terrorist, arm dealer, a reporter / CIA spy killed, a president ordered a key KIL, etc. It doesn't make any sense, basically. And that's me probably fucking it up a little bit, but it says, like, terrorist, arms dealer, reporter / CIA spy killed, a U.S. president ordered a KIL, etc.
What the
But look at the poster. It's just funny because it's like, what is it? It's Sean Connery with the mic in his hand, right?
Yeah, but also his fucking hair. I've never seen Sean Connery's hair look like that. God. Jesus.
But that one I really like too.
It's so fucking weird.
So number six was Chariots of Fire, which I'm pretty sure is about running in the Olympics or something. Which isn't as cool. And the title is not as cool. You're like, Chariots of Fire. Fuck you. But I also think, I'm pretty sure it's like an epic song that goes with like,
doo, 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 doo. It's the doo, 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 doo.
What?
What? I'm not a good singer, but like.
Obviously. Doo, doo, doo. It sounds like.
Imagine my voice is a piano.
Oh, doo, 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 doo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what's close.
Close-ish.
Number seven was Victor Victoria, which was a musical starring Julie Andrews and James Garner. That's about jazz or something, I think. Has songs that I've never heard of, which isn't saying much because I don't know musicals. Number eight was If You Could See What I Hear, which is a romantic movie based on the life of blind musician Tom Sullivan. Okay, number cool. 9 was On Golden Pond, which is the only one that I've seen. And from what I remember, is about Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn being old. Henry. I think that's the Katharine Hepburn impression, sort of.
Yeah, nailed
it's
it.
It's just a lot of shaking. And anyway. And then number 10 was Death Trap, starring Alfred from the Dark Knight, Michael Caine, Superman from the 1980s, Christopher Reeve, and which is just a great idea for a movie, just Alfred versus Superman instead of Batman versus Superman. It's like a super short movie, and you could keep the same title, Death Trap. Mao Masto, I can't do a Michael Caine impression. Masto Wine. Okay. Anyway, have you guys seen any of those movies?
No, I've heard of
Chariots of Fire, probably.
Chariots of Fire, Victor Victoria, On Golden Pond, obviously Porky's.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen Porky's.
I've never seen Porky's.
Yeah, well, I have seen Porky's, yes. Okay. Which is weird, the one movie.
And when strange.
Yeah, I guess you can guess my age range when I watched
exactly.
it.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. When did you watch that? Once I figured out that was a movie and there was boobs in it, I was like, hell yeah.
Why don't you compare that movie poster to the other movie posters and we'll try and figure out why you guys have seen that one.
No, I want to. Wait, is it them looking through the people
in the bathroom? It's the fucking people.
Is it really?
I think so. It's
it is the peephole. It's a girl's leg and the guy looking through a peep. Yep, that would have done it for me. Keep an eye out for the funniest movie about growing up. But yeah, okay. Anyway,
yeah, that's what it's about.
Also, it's no wonder Conan killed the box office, because what a forgettable top 10.
Like, yeah,
a lot of romantic dramas that I'm assuming one fantasy movie was probably like your standard like boring fantasy movie. Mm-hmm. Which apologies to any big Sword and Sorcerer fans out there. Although it was rated R. Mm. So, and then I looked up why it was rated R, and it was moderate violence and mild nudity. So, you know, the one thing it didn't have, though, shirtless, heavily muscled Austrian.
Mm-hmm. Could have been true.
A lasting classic. But yeah, anyway, Conan was number 1 at the box office for 2 weeks until a bunch of huge movies were released at pretty much the same time, including Rocky III, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, Poltergeist, and Hanky Panky starring Gene Wilder and Gilda Radner. But those actually, I'm sure Hanky Panky's good too, but those three, I mean, Rocky III, that was tough to fight against. Wrath of Khan, which I've never seen, but I think I've only seen like one Star Trek movie. And then Poltergeist is awesome.
Yeah. Rocky III is Mr. T, right?
Yeah, it's Mr. T.
Okay.
Pain. Predictions. Anyway, so Conan went on to gross $39.5 million in the U.S., about $69 million worldwide, and was the 15th highest grossing movie of 1982. The video cassette version of the film was released on October 2nd, and the sales and rental figures of the video cassettes were high enough to where the movie was listed on Billboard's video cassette top 40 sales for 23 weeks.
Wow.
So sales of the film through home video increased the film's total gross to more than $300 million by 2007.
God damn.
So yeah, that's it for the pre-production stuff. So what do you watch some videos? Some promotional videos?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So once again, couldn't find too much from when this movie came out. And what I did find was pretty straightforward, kind of boring. So we do have a few clips from interviews that he did from different movies.
Got it.
The first one is actually is the only one that I think the only one that I have for Conan, and is a pretty straightforward interview, like I mentioned, up until the last couple of minutes when the interview is over, but the mics are still on. And I just listen to it, and then it doesn't need to be any more description. So
one of the advantages, I think, going into acting was that I had a lot of very helpful people in the first movie, you know, like Jeff Bridges and Sally Fields, that knew that I was a beginner in this field, and they were very willing to help and be very patient and explain to me the scenes and rehearse with me over and over again. And, you know, I think that's contributed a lot to me winning then the Golden Globe Award, because I think if I wouldn't have had that help, I really would have been lost, basically. And that has been the case with Lonnie Anderson or with Jeff Bridges or Kirk Douglas or with anybody I've worked with. You know, I just tell them right in the beginning, listen, I need your help.
we need him to laugh with it.
Yeah, joke. The hard roles and the hard parts are when you have to bang Sandal Bergman on a screen, you know. 40 people people are watching you, how big your weenie is.
That could be difficult.
Okay, stop taking.
It's awkward because he's trying to make him laugh, and he's always like,
I don't even understand what happened.
The guy was like, oh, yeah, keep making, or his producer was probably like, oh, keep making him laugh. So he starts talking about, oh, yeah, the hard part is when you have to bang Sandal Bergman on screen and everybody's watching and your weenie gets all big. Did you not hear that?
No, I heard that part. I'm saying, like, I don't understand why he needed him to laugh at that moment.
I have no idea.
What the fuck were they doing?
I think maybe they were getting reaction shots or something, because the interview's already over. Like, they already ended the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea, because I watched the whole interview, and it's from a different angle for the rest of the time, too. So you see both of them, actually. And then once the interview ends, kind of, they cut into just the interviewer. I don't know.
That is so weird.
Okay. But, oh, yeah, that one was from Brian Lambert, which I forgot to mention because I was writing this in the car. But anyway.
Okay, got
it. So, yeah, there's that one, which, man, Arnold's so honey. So, yeah. Anyway. This next one is a 7-Up commercial Arnold was in the same year the movie came out, and he's with Lonnie Anderson, who he'd been in a TV movie with a couple years prior called The Jane Mansfield Story, which we'll get around to eventually. But anyway, let's check that out.
Look who's turning Diet 7-Up.
Of course. Diet 7-Up is crisp and light, right, Mr. Universe?
To me, everything is light.
I mean, it doesn't have that heavy aftertaste.
To me, nothing is heavy.
Then we're drinking it because we'll give up calories but not taste, right?
I won't give up anything.
Well, then why are you drinking it?
Because Diet 7-Up is delicious. And every time I drink it, it trickles when it goes down.
It's caffeine-free Diet 7-Up. The only thing you give up is calories, right, Arnold?
Okay.
The last shot was him gulping a 2-liter of Diet 7-Up.
He tickles when it goes down. Just got me a little bit. Okay. Moving on. This next one is part of an interview he did with in 1996 with Entertainment Tonight to promote Jingle All the Way. And I think we actually watched part of it already, but there was one thing that stuck out to me this time that I wanted to share. So.
Yes, that is Arnold and this crowd of panicked Christmas shoppers. They're desperately diving for little balls that will be drawn in a lottery. The winners get the only remaining Turbo Man action figures, the hot Christmas toy.
Oh, God. Work is tough.
I'm sure you've been through that with your kids at Christmas, too, finding the right present.
Finding the right thing, and if you don't find the right thing...
You're dead.
You are... It's over.
Right.
You know, they look at you like, oh, Dad.
This is okay. This is that.
Hold on. Did he rip his sleeves off?
Okay. That was the other thing. Okay, so skip forward to 145.
145, all right.
This, can you imagine? This is what it's all about.
Oh, that's right there.
Bye-bye, idiot. Have a good time.
Okay, so basically, in the movie, Arnold is, it takes place, what, Minnesota or something like that, right?
Yeah, it is Minnesota.
So he's it's during Christmas Eve, and he's wearing a semi-casual button-up shirt.
Yeah, it's just like a button-down.
He's got a coat over it.
Yeah, like a big winter coat over it. Like a nice...
But
yeah,
it was super hot when they were filming this, so that kind of makes sense. But also, basically, he ripped the sleeves off his shirt.
And the turtleneck he's wearing underneath, too.
Yes, he's wearing in the turtleneck.
That's true.
And he was wearing a jacket during the scene, and it makes the scene so much better to know that he's wearing a sleeveless dress shirt underneath when he's filming it. But it's just great because he's just showing off those guns.
Now I just wish the toy store scene had turned into like a commando action scene where he starts murdering fools.
And that was pretty much I like the, oh, Dad.
Yeah.
And then when I saw that at the end, I was like, oh, man, why did he rip his sleeves off?
Sorry. Once I realized his sleeves were off, I didn't even pay attention to the rest of that clip.
Okay. There was one more, but I got to save some for when we don't have another thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that does it for the pre-production and the promo videos.
Yeah. So stay tuned to, we're going to have a special guest, and then we're going to watch the movie, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know how things go. I don't know, just fucking download it and listen to it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Dear the party Richter!
If you enjoy our show, please consider giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ThePottyRichter to make sure you never miss an episode. See You with the Potty Richter is a production of Tape Deck Media. Follow Tape Deck on Instagram at tapedeck_media or look us up on Facebook for more hilarious podcasts.